So next up, oh, that's a good picture. It is. I like that. So as you can tell by the verbatim title, that I think we're in store for some qualitative information-rich research coming up. And presenting that is going to be Mary Gowan. Oh, wait, no, I skipped one. Oh, my God, how dare I? How dare I? God, how dare I? And why is this not? Okay, there we go. Triana Cazella Sardinas. God, why? People barely get my name right. I'm always something else anyways. From the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Triana is Project Director at the Center for Sexuality and Health Disparities at the University of Michigan, where she receives her MPH. Triana spent several years working with organizations and health centers in Southeast Michigan. She also has worked as a national coordinator with Allied Media Projects, facilitating workshops to explore the intersections of health, healing, and community organizing. I love all those. Her passions are grounded in racial and disability justice, participatory research, and movement building. So please welcome Triana.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. My name is Triana Cazella-Sardinas. I am from the University of Michigan Center for Sexuality and Health Disparities, also known as Sex Lab. And I have no conflicts of interest to report. So today we're going to talk about a project that Sex Lab did with Al Jamea, which is a Middle Eastern LGBT organization. This was definitely a qualitative project. We conducted focus groups as part of an organizational assessment for Al Jamea with a couple other organizations in partnership. So we'll talk about some of the benefits of that collaboration and what we took away from it. Cool, so some background. This first image is from a campaign prior to the 2010 census. So as you may know, there are very inadequate systems for categorizing and having good records of how many people are in Arab and Middle Eastern communities. Come up, there's seats in the front here. And there are actually some revisions taking place right now for the 2020 census. But frequently, Arabs or Middle Eastern people get categorized as white, which is totally incorrect. And this has huge implications for public health practice and research. This second image is an iconic image of Tahrir Square during the 2011 Arab Spring. And I put this image in here to show how significant this time is right now for Arabs and Middle Eastern people, not just in the Middle East or North Africa, but also all over the world. So Dearborn, Michigan is located just adjacent to Detroit, and it's the most geographically dense Middle Eastern community outside of the Middle East. And people have direct familial ties to what's happening in the Arab world all over. So just hold that during this presentation. This third image is called, this is a group called Take on Hate, which started in the last year. And it works to address anti-Arab and anti-Muslim efforts, primarily in Michigan. There's definitely been a resurgence post 9/11 of not just anti-Arab or anti-Muslim, but also anti-immigrant rhetoric, policies, and hate crimes. And there's been a resurgence of that in the past year or so. So this group started sort of as a response to that. And just to keep in mind, too, that Arab and Middle Eastern communities, like other communities of color, are very politically active. This fourth picture gives a glimpse of the sort of current context in Michigan for Arab and Middle Eastern communities. So this is from 3 weeks ago. This is an open carry gun and anti-Muslim rally held in Dearborn, Michigan. And this is one of 20 protests around the country as part of this sort of very hateful resurgence. And thankfully, as you can see by the title, it says rally outnumbered by counter-protesters. So there's definitely been responses to this. And finally, Middle Eastern LGBT people have some of the same challenges and some of the same resilience strategies as other LGBT people of color. So this can take the form of playing up or playing down identities, finding strength in integrating these identities, and for some feeling a very united sense of self by uniting all these different identities that they share. So Al Jamea specifically serves Middle Eastern LGBT community members. They are located in Dearborn, but they do a lot of work throughout Southeast Michigan. They have an emergency support program, which is basically like mini grants for youth who have been kicked out of their homes or in other dire financial situations. They also do HIV counseling, testing, and referral services, and they do safer sex workshops and social events. And the social events actually are part of the fundraiser for the mini grants for people. Cool. So this was a community-engaged research project. There were two other organizations involved. We're from Sex Lab, El Jamea, and then Youth Center is a consultancy organization that helps nonprofits and other organizations with development. And then Access is a longstanding Arab community center which has medical and social services, not just for the Arab community, but also other immigrant communities as well. The point of this, our focus groups, was part of an organizational assessment, and it was for El Jamea to receive direct feedback on the impact that they're having in the community and what youth feel and think about El Jamea. We also included questions specifically for Access around how they might better serve these populations. In partnership with these organizations, we developed a focus group guide around these four themes: community, intersectionality, healthcare access, and then organizational feedback. We recruited through contacts in El Jamea, and they recruited friends, and this is primarily through sort of discrete communication channels, so individual text messaging, face-to-face, private social media. We conducted two focus groups in a private community space, serve food. These were recorded, transcribed, coded for 11 different themes, and then this went into a final report for all the organizations. Very quickly, sample size. Of these two focus groups we conducted, there was 15 individuals, average age was 24. Most identified as male and as gay. There was a wide range of racial and ethnic identities, as well as religious or spiritual, so some people specifically identified as Middle Eastern, some as Arab, some as Arab American. So there's a wide range of terms that people use to identify, and various countries of family origin. So we had so much in this report, I wish I could talk more about it, but I picked out themes specific to this presentation, and instead of me standing up here summarizing everything, I want you to hear the voices of the participants. So each of the quotes that I'm going to read off relates to the intersection of sexuality and their other identities or other forces in their life. So this first one is about holding multiple identities. It's tough. It's like holding a two-edged sword. You want to support the Middle Eastern community, but how can you support them specifically and your true identity and tradition when they don't support you as an LGBTQ member? It's a really awkward position to be in. Another participant is explaining what it's like to integrate multiple identities and how they found meaning in that. Your culture prepares you to become who you are, and even though that might be against an aspect of who you are, I think ultimately it prepares you to be who you are. So participants also discuss how gender norms in their communities impacted how they understood their sexuality. So this is one participant sort of explaining their home life and their family life. Your parents tell you to be a man, and the problem is what comes off of being a man is you never lie, never be ashamed, and never be scared. And I have a hard time being those things and being in the closet. That's why I can't be the man my parents want me to be if I'm still in the closet. I'm struggling being an actual man, which can only happen when I come out. Participants also gave very specific feedback from past El Jamea events. And this next quote is about a specific event that happened where people had concerns about privacy, the promotion of the event, and the visibility of membership of the organization. So one person was explaining. That's the thing. They were trying to bring them out of the closet, get comfortable, meet other gay people, but it's not that easy because you can't just advertise it at Access, because then all the Middle Easterners are going to come out and are going to hear about it. No one is going to want to show up because basically you're going to burn yourself. So some participants were highly religious or spiritual, and others not so much. There was a wide range of strategies that people used to sort of find strength in that, but also many of them talked about having to navigate difficulties in holding both a religious orientation and an LGBT identity. So one person reflected, "I prayed when I was going through my struggle, like I would wish it gone, and I prayed and I prayed, and that's all I would do. And still to this day, I have a crucifix in my room. I'm still religious, but I kind of created my own religion that accepts me." So because we recruited through some friend circles, some of the participants knew each other, others didn't. And there was strong solidarity and mutual understanding amongst the Arab and Middle Eastern youth, similar to the connection to other LGBT people of color might feel. And this next quote is one participant referring to another participant. "I haven't even had conversations with their parents, but I already know exactly who their parents are just because of how they act, and I just know the struggles that they have faced. And I feel like I can't get that from just a normal person that's non-Arab, just coming out, having to dress certain ways, having to be at home at certain time. And just like when you grow up as a Middle Eastern person, you go through different struggles. I'm sure it's like that. I'm sure other communities face the same things." There was so much more. I wish I had all day to talk about this, but I don't. There were really powerful quotes in these two focus groups. We conducted two focus groups, but we had many more scheduled. So one of our biggest challenges was recruitment. And even some of the participants talked about that. They said, "We're here today, but for all of us who are here today, there are many other people who would never, ever, ever come to a focus group on this, and they don't even identify as LGBT, even though you might categorize them as that." So there were, and this is primarily over concerns over confidentiality and privacy, and it was just too much of a risk for people to come, despite holding it in a private location and through trusted organizations. We had additional efforts to reach out to LGBT, Arab, and Middle Eastern women. We offered one-on-one interviews in person or over the phone, but we weren't able to recruit anyone. So overall, there's limited representation of women and no representation of transgender people. So some implications for practice. Overall, participants wanted increased transparency and privacy. So this is very much echoed in their personal struggles. Some of them want to be out, but need a specific set of conditions to feel safe doing that. So similarly, they wanted Al Jumeiyah to be out, but not too out, to be visible, but to support their community in a private space. So they gave really specific feedback on how to recruit and how to communicate. Don't tag me on Facebook. Some people even had two different Facebook accounts. You text me, I'll text this person, we text this other person. Send private invitations to events, stuff like that. They did talk about wanting to have a greater focus on the lesbian community. And they wanted more, they gave lots of ideas for different education workshops. So they had empowerment-based workshops, more sex ed workshops. And activism was really important for many of these youth, and they spoke about wanting to improve the lives of LGBT Middle Eastern youth. And so they wanted Al Jumeiyah to continue having a social justice orientation. So fast forward, Al Jumeiyah receives this report in the summer, and they have since then been doing capacity development training with the nonprofit organization I mentioned earlier, and this is about sort of organizational governance and structure and process. They increased their emergency assistance program and have added in employment support services. They've also recruited a youth to be on their board, and this youth is also heading up a subcommittee of other youth to address homophobia within religious communities. So they have some speakers lined up for the winter for this program. They're also developing a media campaign on love and acceptance of Middle Eastern LGBT people with a focus on women. It needs to be billboards and social media and aimed at families and parents. I want to thank Chris Ramazzotti, Rosemary Linares, David Posner, Emily Pingle, Stephen Sullivan, and Jose Bauermeister. My name's Triana. You can contact me here, and I'd be happy to talk to you afterwards.